Welcome back to another edition of The Main Event. Today is episode 75, three quarters of a way to 100. That is crazy. And today on the show, we have three great guests. Been really looking forward to having this young lady on the show. Heather Hardy, who made her Bellator, her mixed martial arts debut at Bellator NYC, will be on the show discussing her boxing career, her upbringing, and how she got into combat sports, and now her affiliation with MMA and the Bellator promotion. Also, we're going to have Sean Lally, who picked up a big win his last time out, and he's a guy on the rise here in the New England area, and Alan Crowder as well, who impressed Dana White at the Contender Series last time out and signed with the UFC. So they got a new heavyweight to add to the division.
Yep, some really exciting guests, and I'm sure we're going to have to ask Heather. I know it's a little bit further out from the Mayweather-McGregor bout, but with her experience inside the cage, also in the boxing ring, it'll be interesting to see what her thoughts might be on how well Conor looked in the boxing realm of things. And man, I was listening to Owen Roddy today and his conversation. He was talking a little bit about all the experiences and everything too. And he is not giving up on the hopes that maybe that Conor will go back in the boxing ring again for his next fight.
I just can't see it.
Feet were to the fire, and he said, where do you think he's going to fight next? Is it going to be, and who's it going to be? And he said, well, if it's in the MMA side of things, I could see this and this, but he would not definitively say it was going to be an MMA fight, so.
Well, that's just crazy to me. But, you know, obviously if Conor can go and make more money boxing, he seems to like his money. Maybe that's what he does, but I sure hope it's not the case. I know as a hardcore MMA fan, I want to see him back in the octagon and defend one of his belts, for crying out loud. That's what you need to do, Conor.
And not just that. You know what the number one MMA bout that he could think of for Conor coming out is?
I'm going to say Nate Diaz.
It's Nate Diaz. Yeah. The end of the trilogy, or at least the third fight of the trilogy. Who knows? It might go on to like eight chapters by when all is said and done, when both guys are desperate for money or something of that ilk. Hopefully that's never the case. But yeah, that's the fight to have. That's the fight to have in the end of December. Just book it right now. It's the big money fight. If Conor McGregor's a money fighter now, if he's learned something from Floyd, it's to do that in the MMA side of things and make sure both guys are paid, because it's going to set a UFC pay-per-view rate buy rate.
One thing's for certain, you know everyone's going to want to see that trilogy. I mean, the first two fights were unbelievably, you know, epic nights in the MMA world. The first time around, Conor was really looking good up against Nate, and then he gassed out and ended up getting choked out. And the second time around, it was back and forth. It was so close, and Conor ended up winning that decision. So a third fight eventually will happen. Whether it's next, who knows? That remains to be seen. But eventually, you know that will happen. You know what? I'd like to see Conor versus the other Diaz brother as well. That would be a lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, that's if he gets cleared and actually can, you know, go to a UFC sanctioned event. I mean, he's not even allowed in the building anymore.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy to think. Nick Diaz, and he is one of really, you know, he's a pioneer in the sport.
Right.
And he's unbelievably, he's kind of notorious himself for everything that he's done and he's known for. And I just love watching him fight. So I really hope that Nick can get through this and get back in the cage too.
Yeah, because the sport of MMA is better with the Diaz brothers.
Oh, absolutely.
Before we get on some other topics, I do have to bring up someone, and I feel bad for, I can't remember who the outlet was. It might have been MMAfighting.com. It might have been Flow Combat. But I was reading up, and they said, you know what the perfect fight is for the UFC's jump in and for the promotion to start in boxing would be McGregor versus Paulie Malignaggi. Because Paulie, I don't think, is under any sort of promoter's watch right now. He's retired. And Conor, of course, is still under the UFC deal. And if he's got, three more fights left on his contract, that would at least work well, and it would be under the umbrella. So, yeah, if you're going to go into boxing, you're going to go take down Top Rank and Golden Boy, this is the way to do it.
See, this is my concern. If that's something that Conor does decide to do and he wants to fight Malignaggi again, what happens to his legacy if he loses to Malignaggi? I mean, losing to Mayweather is one thing, right? I mean, Malignaggi's an elite boxer himself.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
World champion. He's right at the top of the level there. But you don't want to keep losing. You don't want to lose more than a couple times, because it taints your legacy. Even though it's a different sport.
Right.
The public look at you as you're not so immortal. You're not such a bad guy as you've made it seem to be, because you're out here losing the guys. You know, I think for Connor, the biggest thing for him next, in my opinion, is to get another win, to get another high profile win, because that elevates him even more so than he already is. He's as famous as he's ever been right now. You don't want to have another loss, because I think that's going to affect negatively on him in the big picture, the way the casual fans want to look at you.
But he could also make more money in the boxing ring than you can in the MMA cage, honestly, if you just look at the returns on the Mayweather-McGregor fight, and comparatively speaking to the last fight he had with Nate Diaz. He's never going to make more money than he will in a boxing ring, especially if he's the number one draw in the main event. So I get it from that point. The only thing that I think it would dissuade Conor from doing it is that if he loses to Paulie, that's the end of his boxing career. There's no coming back from that one. Yeah. No one wants to see you box if you lose to Paulie.
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. And again, too, you know, you saw it with Mayweather when they fought. The boxing gloves are so much bigger than MMA gloves that boxers, they cover up, you know, and when they put their gloves right up to their face, it covers, you know, a good portion, if not most, of the target that you're trying to hit. And so with Connor, with him being such a precision striker and everything, and with MMA MMA gloves, you could be more of a knockout artist than you can with boxing gloves. So I just think that would affect him in a negative way if he keeps wanting to go the boxing route. I think Connor's a mixed martial artist. That's what you got
to
do.
He's going to go back to the boxing ring. You know that, right? I know you love MMA. It's your number one combat sport. You're a big Connor fan, and I do agree. I want to see him in the MMA cage, too, but he's going to go and box again. I think we can both consensually say that.
Before his career is over, yes. I would completely agree with that. I just hope it's not next.
Right. I hope it will be down the line. And even for that potential Paulie Malignaggi fight, it would be better if it's a little bit removed and Paulie's a year older. Paulie's now a year away removed from his retirement, so he's a little bit more rusty. It would just play into the factors that makes that more an intriguing matchup. But you know what I say to when you say holding the gloves up to the face and everything? Rocky, you got him in the midsection. You got to hit him in the midsection, Rock. Because that's basically what you got to do. Yeah. If you got the hands up high, you see that Rock in the midsection, make him bring him down, then you get the power punches there. But that's a little sweet science for you.
No, sure. No, and I can totally understand and hear that. But to me, when I think of the shots that Connor drops his opponents with, they're usually on the chin. It's that big left that he lands. I haven't seen him, or at least I can't remember him finishing someone with a body shot. He usually does it when he lands that big left right on their jaw. So, you know, to me, I just think that puts him at even more of a disadvantage.
Right. Another couple of things we want to talk about before we do get into our great interviews here for this program, something that's near and dear to my heart, and something I don't think I wanted
I know
to
where
see
you're going.
Again, but you know what? They've got my interest again, and if it's on pay-per-view, they probably got my pay-per-view dollars as well. There is a rumor, Duke Rufus actually started it too, because Mac Desi was at Rufus Sport, and he was training, and he put out a picture on Instagram saying, like, honor to train with the best in the world. That was his moniker back in pro wrestling, CM Punk, up in Minnesota. And Duke Rufus said, oh, yeah, I can't wait to see both these guys, just waiting on fight confirmations, which means, yes, we will see CM Punk in MMA again, and for UFC, because I'm pretty sure he signed, a three-fight contract when he first, or at least it was two. I know it was a multiple-fight deal when Dana White inked the former professional fighter to a deal, so that means we are going to have Punk inside the octagon again, and does that give you any interest of seeing what he can do?
Well, sure, because it's, you know, it's again, it's like a spectacle, right? I mean, that's what everyone thought it when Connor went and wanted to box. So, yeah, CM Punk, he's a celebrity. You know, he comes over from the world of wrestling, and there's going to be a lot of people that want to see, you know, what he can do, even though his first time out against Mickey Gall wasn't, you know, something
bloodbath. Yeah, literally.
It was awful. But then again, you know, if you think about it, he got taken right down.
Right.
Hooks in, he couldn't get up, and he just got beaten into oblivion from there.
Right.
Maybe he's learned more takedown defense, and maybe he will keep this fight on the feet regardless of who it is, you know, and maybe his striking's gotten better. You never know what you're going to see. And I think when you have someone who is a celebrity like CM Punk clearly is, it just adds that element of intrigue. You want to see what's going to happen. And, you know, will this fight be at 170 again? Or do you think, you know, will he
it's gotta be.
Cut? Yeah?
Yeah, it's got to be. I don't think he can cut. I don't think he can cut like that. I'm pretty sure he wasn't like a high school wrestler, too. Mm-hmm. He hasn't gone through those dramatic weight cuts that you would need to get down to. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he was walking around at probably 205, 220 back in his heyday with professional wrestling. I mean, he was never the skinniest guy ever. So, mm-hmm. And, I mean, he never really got real cut, too, when he got the weight cut. So I think, yeah, he's probably going to stay there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, sure. I mean, what do you think, Brian? This is your this is your guy, so you need to tell me a little bit about what you think.
I do know who I can credit on this one. It is Flo Combat. I was reading an article and basically them talking about who would be the person he would fight. And again, it's got to be someone who's not as good as Mickey Gall, because I don't care if you've been training for a year, because the fight was actually almost a year ago. If not, it was a year ago. I think it was actually around this time. He needs to fight someone who's relatively young in the MMA game. And it's not going to be the Green Power Ranger, though I would pay money to see that fight too, because that would be akin. It's a guy who's not really well-versed in MMA, and he's a name. But I want to see a guy who also has a Mickey Gall connection.
Okay.
Do you know who that is?
Hmm.
It's not Sage Northcutt.
Yeah, because
that would also end the same result, I think, with CM Punk losing in the first round.
I don't know. Hit me with it.
It's the first UFC opponent for Mickey Gall. It was a guy named Mike the Truth Johnson. The guy he had to fight to earn the shot against CM Punk, if you remember, on one of those. I'm not sure if it was a prelim, but it was before a pay-per-view, before the main card. It might have been the first fight of the main card. But he had to fight Mike Johnson to get to that potential matchup at that September UFC pay-per-view card out in Cleveland, that Stipe headline. Mm-hmm. So he had to beat him, and he did so pretty easily. You know how many fights that old Mike had before that one?
I don't really know. Mike Johnson doesn't really... the memory, it's gone. I don't know.
I think he had two amateur bouts, one victory, one loss. He made his pro debut on the card, too, and lost. He's only fought one time since, and it was not in a mixed martial arts bout. It was in a Muay Thai fight.
Wow.
Which he lost via decision.
Hmm.
Unanimous decision, too.
Right.
So this is a guy
who... Yeah,
who has his own podcast too? I haven't listened to it before, but I'm sure it's good. You can go check it out. I'm sure it's out there. You can find him. He's actually very lively on Twitter too. But he is a guy that I think would be at least at the level of CM Punk, and I'm not sure who he trains with. But hey, he's got relatively the same amount of experience, and he's also lost to Mickey, so there's that possibility. And he said he's not afraid to get down and dirty and talk the trash with CM Punk.
Well, I like where your head's at. So if this guy's not available, if the UFC doesn't want him back or whatever, I think what Dana needs to do is find the lowest-ranked welterweight on the UFC roster and match him up with CM Punk.
See, I don't even think that works. I don't even think that works. I think this is like the only guy you can have fight CM Punk. I honestly do. You need a guy who is relatively inexperienced in mixed martial arts at all. You almost need someone like another professional wrestler. And I was joking with my buddy about the New Japan Pro Wrestling heavyweight champion, the IWGP heavyweight champion in, I'm going to butcher his first name, but Okada. Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, I'd rather see Okada fight CM Punk if he could get down to 170, or even if they had to fight it at 185. I don't think Okada, who's like 6'4", 6'6", could get down to that level. But like, you almost need that kind of draw if it's not a guy like Mike Johnson, right? Because do you want to see a guy who's an up-and-comer like Mickey Gall, who was relatively inexperienced at the time, too? He had, what, one pro fight under his belt before he got the UFC gig?
Yeah, I mean, I got no clue who Mike Johnson is. So just because, to me, that's not selling the fight. You know, like, so I don't know. I mean, CM Punk, to me, is the draw. If anyone, to me, the opponent is... You know, it is what it is.
But don't you want him to have, like, a winnable matchup, too?
For sure. But if it turns out to be, you know, and rest in peace, if it turns out to be, you know, Kimbo versus Dada, something like that, that's a bad look the UFC does not want. So, again, they don't want to throw him in there with someone who's on his level and the fight turns out to be garbage. Also, they're towing that line because they also don't want to feed him to the wolves and give him someone else that is just going to manhandle him and embarrass the poor guy. So,
if he did sign a 3-fight deal, he's already on fight 1, so he's moving on to fight 2 next. have him fight this guy. Pray to God he wins. If not, you release him from his contract. And you say, thanks, but no thanks. Yeah. You made a couple million dollars on our behalf, but now move on. You got us some buys where we didn't have a lot of star and drawing power. But if he does win, then give him a challenge. Maybe that first one was a fluke. Maybe Mickey Gall is for real. Maybe he is a legit fighter, and you just happen to run into him early on in his career. And then you could at least have the third fight, and it's sellable. Because now you get a 1-1 pro versus whomever.
Let me tell you this, though. If the UFC, if this doesn't work out and Dana cuts him, whatever, you know who's going to be calling him is Scott Coker. For sure. Bellator will bring him in a heartbeat.
You know who should be calling him is the Bullet Club. Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks. He needs to be part of the Bullet Club, that professional wrestling stable out in New Japan and Ring of Honor. That's who I want to see him with. And they're like, the only person we would allow in to the Bullet Club is Hulk Hogan and CM Punk. So I would like to see both of those guys in there, brother. Just the last thing here, some fantasy booking, because if Vince McMahon was doing it, you know who he would be fighting?
Who?
It would be a triple threat match. Brock Lesnar, CM Punk, and Dave Bautista, who also fought, I'm pretty sure on this one, I'll have to go back and check, I think he fought for CES.
Dave Bautista,
who goes by Bautista,
right,
of course.
Yeah.
And
he's a movie star, too.
Yeah, probably going to be a Hall of Famer come April
for
WWE.
So Brock Lesnar and Dave Bautista would go against CM Punk. Isn't that weight class a little different there? I mean,
this is the XFL. if Vince McMahon was in Dana White's position, he'd have a triple threat MMA and he would just strip Stipe of the title. It would be a heavyweight bout. That's what would happen. But alas, Dana at least has some sort of regard for the sport of mixed martial arts, so we'll never see that. But I that would be a great idea. Like, could you think of that? All three of those guys just going in there.
Right. I feel bad for CM Punk. I mean, he's going to be outweighed by about 300 pounds between the two of those monsters.
And then here comes Rey Mysterio off the top of the cage. Last thing before we talk with Heather Hardy and the rest of our great guests here. Have you seen the new UFC fight kits?
Yeah, look nice. What do you think?
I like them. I like them a lot. I'm still not a huge fan of the Reebok deal. I think it really screws over the fighters, especially not having their own sponsors and everything. And I've been so critical that I think they just don't have that personality base, but there's more colors now, Ryan.
There's more colors. It's, you know, they're adding, look, they're going to sell more on their website. All the young kids that, you know, want to look up to their favorite fighters, their parents will buy their jersey for, you know, Christmas or their birthday or whatever. So it's just another way to make more money. But I'm in the same boat as you as far as, like, you know, the old days where they were able to have their own sponsors, because quite honestly, the fighters here in this world of mixed martial arts don't make as much money as they should.
I mean, when you're making 10 and 10 for your first UFC fight,
it's not okay.
You could at least make $5,000 on sponsorships.
Yeah.
I mean, it's simple math there, too. And I know they make a little bit of scratch on the Reebok deal, but they could probably make more than that on their own sponsorships if they're an entrepreneur. So, yeah, I like them. Maybe it coerces me into potentially buying a kit in the future, but unlikely. Though they do have personalized shirts for, like, Ray Borg and Mighty Mouse that we'll see this weekend. So it'll be a little bit more of a fun thing to watch while Mighty Mouse just dominates Ray Borg, who has, I'm not going to say doesn't deserve to be in that fight, but, like, let's be honest there. Like, he's not, like, the legit contender we're all hoping for right now. But
Who else is there?
Exactly, yeah. Bantamweight division. That's the only thing I could think.
That's exactly right.
But, yeah, some interesting news and notes. Still a little bit of a slow time, but we'll have our UFC 215 predictions coming up in the next episode here on the weekend time, so be sure to keep it tuned for that one. But we're going to stay clear of it for today because we have a lot of great show content and guests awaiting for you.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and it's getting hot in here right now. The heat.
Heat
is right.
It's building. It's rising.
It's here, and that's because Heather, the Heat Hardy, is on the phone. We'll be right back with her. The Main Event is proud to be sponsored by the Sea Dog Brewing Company. The Sea Dog right here in Bangor is on 26 Front Street, right on the beautiful Penobscot River. You can reach them at the Sea Dog by dialing 207-947-8009, or if you want to check them out online, go to seadogbrewing.com. What you guys need to do is on Wednesdays, go spend your Wednesday night or evening, whatever it may be, at the Sea Dog. They have unbelievable specials. A 2-pound lobster with French fries and coleslaw, only $37. They also have a 14-ounce teriyaki ribeye with mashed potatoes medley, and that's $27. Or if you're not feeling like your paycheck isn't as much as it has been lately, you want to save a little money, they got you covered there too. Barbecue pulled pork sub, onions, peppers, and pepper jack cheese with shredded potato fries or sweet potato fries. That's only $12. So many different options for you to get at the Sea Dog. And as always, they have the delicious Blue Paw on tap and plenty more beers to choose from. Do yourself a favor. Go to the Sea Dog in Bangor at the Penobscot River, 26 Front Street, or you can call them 947-8009.
She's just a girl and she's on fire, hotter than a fantasy, lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire, filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away.
We are back, and joining us now is an undefeated professional boxer and mixed martial artist. She holds a 20-0-1 pro boxing record and is the WBC International Female Super Bantamweight Champion. On June 24th at Bellator NYC, she made her pro debut in the MMA world when she beat Alice Yeager via KO in the third round with punches. Heather the Heat Hardy is on the show. It's a pleasure to have you here today, Heather.
Oh, thanks for having me. Nice to talk to you.
Definitely. Now, but before we discuss your pro MMA debut and your boxing career, you have a really, really interesting story. So we'd like to start with your upbringing in New York City and how combat sports actually found you. Tell us how you threw your first punches growing up in Garrison Beach.
Oh, sure. Well, I didn't start boxing until I was 28. I was in the middle of a divorce, and I kind of just found myself in this little karate gym, and my first fight was in 3 weeks, and I won, and realized, wow, I'm finally good at something. So I stuck with it.
Is that just something where you get it in your blood for the first time? You get that competitive juices flowing that you just say, now I'm going to do this for the rest of my life, because it's just so fun to get that hand raised?
I suppose. I mean, I think, like, everyone talks about the fight or flight reflex, right? Like, you get punched in the face, and do you go towards the guy or away from the guy? And I guess I just was born with that gene that makes you go right after a person. So it's a good thing to have.
Now, where you grew up, it seemed to be kind of a rough and tough place where you have to be a tough individual to really get through and survive there. Is that something that you feel like was ingrained from you right from the beginning, that even though you didn't get into fighting until a little bit later in your 20s, that you always knew how to take care of yourself as a younger person?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say. I mean, I don't want to give Garrison Beach a bad name. It's not a bad neighborhood. It's not a scary neighborhood. It's not a neighborhood where, you know, you walk down the street and you're afraid to get killed. But it's we're a bunch of Irish folks that are, like, second generation off the boat, and we're born to be tough, to be able to take a plunge. Or, you know, your neighbor will slap you in the head if they see you smoking a cigarette, that kind of thing. So I was always tough and, you know, could take a beating from when I was a kid, but not necessarily because my neighborhood was so bad, mm-hmm. but because everybody's parents were so strict, and we would fight like kids would fight in the street, but not necessarily, you know, scary, rough and tough, scary.
Sure.
I definitely think it plays a big role in who I am, though, because, you know, my mom taught me when I was young that nobody will hit you like your mom does, so you better not be afraid of anybody.
Very true. I come from an Irish background myself, so I can relate. And on that topic, I wanted to get your thoughts, especially as such a successful boxer as you clearly are. When you see someone like a Conor McGregor, who clearly is from Ireland, is very proud, what are your thoughts on him, I guess, as a mixed martial artist and his transition over to boxing? And And what do you feel about his whole shtick? Do you think that what he's doing is good for the sport, or do you think it comes across in more of a negative type of way and really not kind of like a role model like some of these guys like a George St. Pierre is?
Well, I think that all athletes who are in the spotlight are role models, especially the successful ones, because you don't really get to be successful unless you're really true to yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So I could never knock this guy's hustle because he's remained who he is his entire career, right? Like, he didn't just turn into this character for the money. Like, he's been this same character his whole career. He remained true to himself and did everything he had to do to walk away with over $100 million paycheck. So you can't say it's good for the sport or bad for the sport, man. He stayed true to who he was and took it to the top of where any, financially to the top of where any MMA fighter has ever done it. So, you know, hats off to him. Anybody who says otherwise is really just hating on the guy. I don't agree with how everybody handles their business, but don't make it that they're right or wrong when they're doing the business.
As someone who watched that fight against Floyd Mayweather with Conor McGregor, would you want to see Conor back out there in a boxing match again? Is that something that does interest you?
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, when you can go 10 rounds with arguably the greatest of all time, it makes you wonder how he could do with like other champions. And I said that before I even saw the fight. You know, the way he's a very intimidating person, and just because he didn't intimidate Floyd doesn't mean he couldn't intimidate 80% of the champions out there. I mean, I think he could go for a belt at 147, 154, and not have as hard of a time as he did with Floyd.
What are your thoughts on Conor McGregor versus Paulie Malignaggi? Paulie is widely considered one of Brooklyn's favorites, and obviously he helped Conor out during training camp, although if some people want to say maybe he helped Floyd out because they talked about how they kind of put him in there to help and get some, you know, I guess specifics as to how Conor is burned during training. So what are your thoughts on that matchup and the whole aftermath of what took place when that video leaked between those two?
Well, I thought from the beginning that this is kind of hyping it up so that because Conor made it clear he wants to be back in the ring at some point. He wants to still box, and I mean, you want to have exciting matchups, right? That the MMA community is so much bigger than the boxing community. So when you have all the MMA hype saying, fight this guy, fight this guy, fight this guy, it's great for boxing because it puts so much attention on the ring and not the cage, right? So I think it will be a good fight. People often tend to sleep on Paulie Malignaggi, and he's really one of the smartest boxing minds that are out there. I mean, if he dedicated himself to a fight camp and to getting in shape, you know, he went out there as a training partner. If he really dedicated himself to training for his own fight, I mean, I think it'll be a good matchup.
Yeah, I for sure would like to see Conor back in the ring at some point. I want to see him continue his MMA career first and foremost, but that boxing is something that intrigues me. And I also want to see you back into the boxing ring here soon. I know you're scheduled for another MMA bout, and we'll talk about that later on. But how did your conversations with Leonard Ellerbe go about potentially getting you on Showtime here in the future?
Oh, I have a boxing promoter, and it's not the Mayweather. I'm not part of the money team. Leonard Ellerbe gave me an award, and that's why I was in Vegas, but I'm promoted by DeVell Entertainment.
I know, but you've had some conversations about potentially being on Showtime, though, correct? And maybe getting on...
I have. I mean, I've tried to pitch myself to Showtime, but certainly not with Steven Espinosa, with Leonard Ellerbe, and I wouldn't want that to get out because it sounds really bad and disrespectful to my own boxing promoter, who works very hard to get me... get me matches and get me visibility. So I just want to clarify that Leonard Ellerbe is not the guy who's doing that for me.
Right, absolutely. My mistake on the mistake.
When I was on the Helwani show, I did talk about that. You know, the problem that we have in America is that they're not televising these big female fights. So in the past, you have these girls who are fighting for world titles making no money. Whereas in countries like Canada, Mexico, Switzerland, Germany, Argentina, women are headlining shows, making $30,000 and $40,000, main eventing a big card, television card, and they're making money over there. And it's making them not want to come to America to fight because the purses are so small. And there's a girl in Canada I would love to fight, but she doesn't want to come to America because no one wants to pay her. So I've been trying to pitch to Steven Espinoza, like, bring her here. People want to see this fight, so we deserve to be paid.
Do you think that maybe women's boxing can get onto the level that could get you some actually decent purses to fight in the United States? Like MMA, at least in the women's side, I know that Dana White was very apprehensive about bringing the divisions to the UFC, but eventually did, and you could see how much money is generated. Bellator, the same thing. Do you feel like maybe boxing can eventually get to that level here in the next couple of years?
I hope so. I mean, look, like the biggest payday Conor McGregor as an MMA fighter ever got was in boxing, was when he boxed, because the difference between boxing and MMA is there is more money spread out in MMA, right? So you don't have guys making $100 million, but you have more of the people like me, the 20 and O's, who are making good enough money where they don't have to work other jobs. In boxing, the money is spread out so small, but there's so much more of it, right? Like, I'm lucky if I can get a $10,000 or $12,000 purse to do a title fight, a 10-round title fight. In MMA, I'm already making more money doing three rounds.
So do you feel that MMA is where your future lies? Is that ultimately where we're going to see more of you in competition?
Well, I'd like to stay active where it makes the most sense, right? So if there's not a boxing match that can make sense for me, I'm not looking to keep my fans watching me fight the same opponents, right? Like, that's not fair to them. And if I can go into the cage and get better opportunities, then that's what I plan to do. I mean, there are so many girls left that I want to box, but I need to have those opportunities to do that, to give those exciting fights to my fans. And I'm riding on my promoter that I'm fully confident that he's going to make all those things happen for me.
And talking about staying active, you had a quick turnaround from your last boxing match where you defended your title. That was on May the 18th against Adina Kiss at the Paramount Theater in Brooklyn. And then just over a month later in June on the 24th, you made your MMA professional debut at Bellator NYC against Alan Yager. How difficult of a turnaround was that? And how healthy were you going into that debut MMA fight?
Oh, I was healthy. I was ready. I mean, it was a really long training camp. I took a vacation after the MMA fight, but it's like part of the fight business, right? Like, you have to take opportunities when they're there, and I had two in a row, so I had to take them. I mean, last year I didn't fight between August and, I think it was April, or August and, yeah, say August and April from 2016 to 2017. I didn't have a fight. So if two come up right in a row, I'm going to jump on it.
How hard is that for you when you have to, or maybe not have to, but when you're forced to take a break like that where you don't get to stay active and fight? Do you go a little stir crazy?
I sure did. I mean, certainly pay crazy too, right? Like, I was expecting paychecks that I never got. It was extremely a difficult financial time for me. I was so fortunate to have the help of, I mean, I had random fans mailing me checks to help pay my rent.
Wow.
I mean, like, incredible things were happening. But it was a really difficult time. So, like I said, if three fights come up in a row, as hard as it is, I mean, you take the opportunities that are there.
And you talk about, too, not just juggling your career, but you're also a mother, too. How difficult is it trying to be a full-time mom while also being a full-time fighter?
It's hard to be a full-time mom and be a full-time anything, right? I mean, being a single parent is not easy, whether you're a fighter or you're a doctor or a school teacher or a bus driver or whatever you are. I mean, I always say, like, you know, they always ask the girls, how do you have your job and your family? But nobody asks the boys that. It's hard, but we do what we have to do.
How much time on a daily basis do you get to spend with your daughter, and how difficult is that while you're, like, in full-blown training camp and you have to be in the gym putting in that work?
It's extremely challenging. I'm fortunate to live, like, very close to the gym where I can run back and forth between teaching and working. My daughter's 13. She's in school. So in the afternoons, you know, it's like typical stuff, homework. Mommy might have to run back and forth to work. Maybe she comes with me. She has after-school activities. You know, she's a super active kid. We might have dinner real late at night, and then she goes to bed, but it's a sacrifice all parents make. When I was a kid, my parents worked two jobs. I barely saw them.
But you grow up and you realize that that's what your parents have to do, right?
And I heard your conversation with Ariel, and you said that your daughter doesn't think you're cool. How is that possible?
No. I mean, I don't think anybody thinks their parents are cool. She's so unimpressed by me, but it's not in a bad way. It's in a teenage daughter right. kind of way. She's my best friend. She loves me to death, but I'm sure in 5 or 10 years she'll look back and think, "Wow, that was a long life."
Now, does she like MMA or boxing? Is that something that she even entertains the idea to maybe get into down the line?
Oh, she's not at all into combat sports or sports at all, for that matter. She's really a girly girl. She's nothing like me. Completely the opposite. So it's like I said, boxing, fighting, MMA, the gym, it's all my job. It's all part of what her mom does that she really doesn't care about.
Well, speaking of MMA, I know you're scheduled for your second Bellator bout here in New England coming up in October. Is there any status update on who you're going to be facing coming up in that matchup?
Not as yet. The guys told me just train, you're going to have somebody, and I'm confident that they'll put someone in front of me. We're in the middle of contract, so I'm sure it should emerge within the next couple days.
Talk about your debut fight at Bellator NYC. Allison Yager, she had this was her ninth professional fight as a mixed martial artist, and you were making your debut. How comfortable and confident did you feel going into that fight, and how would you assess your overall performance looking back at it now?
Oh, my gosh, I was so nervous. I remember walking down the ramp to go into the cage, and I hear Girl on Fire playing. And I looked over at George, who was the New York City inspector from the Athletic Commission. And I looked over at George, and I was like, George, what am I doing? I was so nervous. Once the bell rings and you tap hands, it's like a fight, right? So it doesn't matter who has experience, who knows what. I mean, my mom said, if you're out on the street and someone takes your wallet, you ain't about to ask them how many years they have in the gym, right? You're not going to ask to do 3 rounds of jump rope to warm up before you can get out. You're just going to get to it. So I was ready to just get to it.
And how did you feel your overall skill set had progressed before you made your MMA debut? Obviously, as a very skilled boxer that you clearly are, did you feel like your takedown defense, your jiu-jitsu, your wrestling, your ground game, everything was on point, or you felt comfortable regardless of where the fight went?
I think that I definitely don't have the experience in that department, so we focus more on keeping me on my feet, which I'm sure you saw. I knocked you down twice, and I just waited for her to get back up because I wasn't confident enough with someone who had 9 fights, right, to go down and chance jiu-jitsu. I wanted to have a win, and I wanted that knockout bonus, so I wanted to keep her on her feet. But I was really confident in what my, sticking to the game plan and staying to my strong suit. So as far as that goes, I was really confident. If I had to grade my performance, I would have given myself definitely maybe a C+ or a B-. I mean, for my first time, what an incredible finish. At the end of the fight, I don't think I could have scripted it to have gone any better, but it really took me a whole round to get comfortable in there. So we've really been in the gym working on fixing and cleaning up some of the technical aspects of what you guys saw that night.
How long do you want to continue your boxing and MMA career? Is that more like a judgment call? You'll know when you know.
Yeah, when it's not fun anymore, right? I don't want to do this if it's not fun anymore. But the thing is so many people have criticized that I'm 35 years old and I'm just starting. And I really want to point out that we're in a different time, right? It's not 1964 and we're talking about people eating McDonald's and drinking soda and just being unhealthy. With the advancement of medicine and science, people are living longer. People's bodies are stronger. I mean, me at 35 is way different than my mom at 35 and even more different than my grandma at 35. So there's nothing to say that I can't be 40 years old and be a world champion in both sports.
I do want to ask you about this one because you've been so open about the sexual assault that happened early on in your life. And do you feel like you're so open about it just as a message to other young girls out there that they can talk about it and it's not the end of the world, that you can still go on and become a champion like you?
Yeah, I only talk about it because of the message that it sends to young girls and even young boys, right? Like, it happens to everyone. Because I remember the worst part of the whole thing was feeling so isolated and alone. And as I started to talk to people who that similar things happened to, I was so surprised, thinking like, wow, this person has such a successful life, or this person has such a good job, or this person has such a happy marriage. And it made me hopeful that I could have a happy job. One day I could have a successful, happy relationship because I see the success in others. So I find it almost like my duty or my obligation to speak out for all the little girls out there who feel so isolated and alone, who look up to me. Because I get those messages every day, right? Like little girls in the boxing gym who talk about, look, for doing what you do. I feel like it's my responsibility to let them know that, look, it wasn't easy for me. It hasn't been easy. But I do this despite all of the bad things, and you can too.
How good of a feeling is that to know that, you can make a difference to young people by sharing your message and the horrific experience that you had?
Well, it's a good feeling. It's a bad feeling, right? Like, you know, because it's not easy for me to have to talk about it all the time, and it's not easy to have experienced it, right? Like, if I could trade it and say I wish it never happened to me to not be able to talk about it, I certainly would do that. So it's not like it's a great experience or it's a great feeling, but at least it makes me feel like all of the things that happened to me in my life weren't for nothing, because you can turn negative into positive. So whereas I don't feel like it's this great thing, I do feel like I'm making something better that maybe some people might feel like could never be better.
And I commend you for telling your story. I think it really helps and impacts a lot of people. I do have to mention...
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I love watching you with Ariel Helwani on the MMA Hour, and you seem to have a nice little burgeoning relationship with Mr. Helwani. Is that going to continue to grow in the future, do you think, or are we going to be able to see you more on that program as well?
I hope so. I mean, I think that guy's awesome. I've interviewed with so many people before, and, like, just being in the sports industry, so many baseball games, boxing matches, basketball games, and you hear, like, commentators who rise to the top, right, who say the things that are important, and he's definitely one of those guys, like, real a smart sports mind who knows what his fans want to hear about, whether it's the inside of sports or the outside, right?
Absolutely.
I like the guy. I think he's super talented.
Yeah, both Brian and myself look up to him. He's the very best out there. Heather, before we let you go, I got to ask your thoughts on your New York Yankees. And how did you become a Yankees fan when your dad is a Mets fan?
I like Yankees in spite of it, and I would watch the games and just kind of got hooked on the history, right? Like, it has such a rich history. And I don't know what it is about it. It's like asking me why I like boxing so much, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was good at it. I was great at pitching. I used to dream of running out of the bullpen and saving a World Series game, you know, throwing out the last strikeout from the mound.
So
they are a big part of who I am.
And obviously, baseball is you know, America's pastime, and we're getting close to the playoffs here this year. Right now, the Yankees are in the lead for the wild card position, and the Red Sox are leading the AL East. What do you expect your Yankees to do? Do you think that you're World Series bound?
I do think they can be. I mean, they're riding on that big boy in the outfield right now, and I feel like he's hyped up the whole team, hyped up the whole Yankee family, so I'm excited to see what happens.
Well, we're in Red Sox country, just to let you know, so we still would like to see the Yankees in the postseason, but, you know, if they missed it, we wouldn't be too heartbroken on that, so...
I'm sure.
Well, Heather, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today and talk to you. Your story is really something special and very it's been just great to have you on today so we can talk about it. And hopefully we'll be able to get you on down the line at some point soon.
Oh,
Oh, that'd be great. Thanks so much for having me.
Hi, this is Brian Stackpole, and I want to thank you for listening to The Main Event. And if you want us hand-delivered right to your phone every single time we produce another episode, well, here's a couple of ways you can do so. Go to iTunes, search in, and find our show, and subscribe right away. And while you're there, leave a nice rating as well, because it helps us provide you the best interviews, the best content available. We are also now available on Google Play as well, so go and check that one out, and we will be available in more places than ever before. If you're on social media, make sure to check out The Main Event Show on Facebook. Give it a like and be sure to keep up to date with all the latest news in the mixed martial arts world and also ways for you to interact with the sports you love. So make sure The Main Event is subscribed to on Google Play, iTunes, into your phone so you always have us with you. We can keep you company on those long rides throughout the state of Maine, New England, or throughout the globe. So make sure you do that, and we'll have more Main Event content provided your way coming very soon.
Detroit players, Tim's for my hooligans in Brooklyn. Head right, if the head right, Biggie there.
Joining us now for the first time is a fighter on a 4-fight win streak. You saw him last at Cage Titans 35, where he grabbed a unanimous decision victory over Avery McFadder. Sean Lally is on the show. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, no problem. What's going on today, guys? I love the Biggie intro. That's my jam right there.
Absolutely. You can't go wrong with little Biggie.
No, definitely not.
And you
especially
said,
when you're working out.
Yeah, and you said you want a gangster rap, and I asked Tupac or Biggie, and you said Biggie, so that means you got that East Coast bias, which I love.
That East Coast, yeah.
Now, Sean, let's talk about this last fight against McFadder here. This was your first victory that wasn't a finish. How difficult of a win was this?
It was definitely my toughest test to date. I was happy in a way to have a fight like that. I think it was a really great experience, but it was definitely a really tough fight. There's been a lot of times when I've gone out there and, you know, knocked guys out quick. I'm pretty sure in 2016 I fought for like 27 seconds. So I've needed cage experience, and this fight gave me that time in the cage. This one fight was longer than like my last 4 fights or something like that.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at your past fights. You got a couple of wins, one at 19 seconds, one at 8 seconds. You got another one that was a minute 40 into the first round. So break down this tough test against McFadder for us. How did the fight go for our listeners that didn't get a chance to see it? And how did you score it when it was all said and done?
So the fight was back and forth. It was primarily on the feet. He was a very good counter puncher and had a very snappy jab. In the first round, we were kind of both feeling each other out, gauging distance, getting used to the movement. Looking back at the fight, I could see where they would have scored me or him for round one. And I believe that round happened to go to me. The second round, there was a little more action, and I think that he started stepping it up a little bit and got the better of me in round number two. Round three, we go in. I got another surge of energy. I felt like I really hit my second wind, my second stride, and I could have fought, you know, 3 more rounds at that point, whereas I felt like I slowed a little in the second round. So come out the third, I was really trying to engage. You know, I'm trying to move in on him and cover the distance and, you know, strike with him. But he was backpedaling quite a bit. And I think that secured me round three, looking back. Like, I could say you could decisively give me round three, decisively give him round two, and round one could have gone either way. And it went to me. So round three, The thing that prevented me from getting in on him was I wasn't able to cut the angles and keep him against the cage. And that allowed him to move laterally and circle the cage and stay away from my power punches.
So looking back on it now, I know hindsight's always 20/20, but is that the one thing that you think stands out in your mind that you would do differently if you guys matched up again? Or is there something else that you think you could have done to secure yourself maybe a finish here in this fight or a more dominant win here?
Yeah, there's a lot that I plan on working on. And, you know, I have a pretty good eye for what fighters need to do because I've been watching it for a long time, too. And I can see myself and see where I went wrong and the things I need to correct. And we are going to fight again, for sure. And because I'm not satisfied completely with the victory. It was my victories I base on my performance, and I wasn't completely satisfied with my performance. Like, I want to go in there and knock him out this next fight.
Now, is that something you want to do right away next, or is that something you want to do maybe in a fight or two?
We are going to fight, and it's already basically for Cage Titans November 4th, and we're going to be fighting for a title.
Ooh. Now, has this been announced yet, or are you breaking it right now?
Title. I'm announcing it right now, but Michael Pulver already agreed online, so people already know.
Good. That's very cool. Now, okay, so give us a little way too early prediction here. Are you going to knock him out this next time?
Yes.
What round?
I'm not going to give a round. I'm just going to see where the fight goes, but I will knock him out. And this is the only way. I don't owe him a fight necessarily, but I wasn't satisfied with my performance. And I'm next up for the 185-pound belt. So it made sense to me. I said, you know what, Avery, we'll do a rematch, but it has to be for the belt, and it has to be for 5 rounds. Because I do believe in this last fight I would have knocked him out in the 4th or the 5th. He was gassing. I was on the climb. I was climbing still.
Sean, talk a little bit about Cage Titans and what makes that promotion so great.
Cage Titans is a great league. You know, I'm pretty much planning on fighting for them until I move up to a bigger league. There's a lot of great talent. Michael Pulver has always been for the fighters and willing to work with guys. This will be my 8th fight with Cage Titans, so all but 2. And there's just a very high level of talent and guys that have been growing with this promotion, and now guys who are teetering on the edge of jumping to the next league, you know, going to the UFC or going to Bellator straight out of Cage Titans, where they used to have to go to another league and then maybe make it to the big show. But they're getting a nice stable of fighters, doing a lot of good stuff, like getting it on Flow Combat, more eyes on, bringing guys in from out of state. You know, Avery's from Florida, fought someone from Washington, dude came out from Vegas. You know, they're bringing some very high talent in there, and you're gonna get a good show every time you're there. And the venue's awesome. I love the vibe in Memorial Hall.
It's just interesting hearing you say that, because we hear that from a lot of fighters who just say, once I go into Cage Titans, I don't want to fight anywhere else because they just take care of you. And as you alluded to, it's a nice venue. You get the exposure and you get these good fights. You're not fighting the same sort of people every single time out.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a larger pool of talent to be picked from and a larger number of targets.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice card. You said it's November 3rd or 4th?
November 4th, it's on my birthday. I'm going to win myself a belt on my birthday.
And how old are you going to be?
I'll be 27.
Wow, a happy early birthday. Yeah. And that's that. You're coming right into that age of your physical prime, too. So that'd be nice to get a belt right on your birthday.
For sure, yeah. I got a lot of good years ahead, especially these next few years. I'm going to be taking some dudes out.
Well, I know when people win the Stanley Cup, sometimes they'll drink beers out of the cup itself. What would you do with the title in terms of birthday celebrations? Maybe put the cake on it or something to eat it off, or is there anything else you could implement?
Well, I was thinking it's kind of like a big silver platter, so maybe I'd take it to the buffet and load it up with food.
I like it. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, and use it as a giant plate. My coach, Loco Lobo, always says, let's punch a hole through this kid's head and hit the buffet. So that's probably what we're going to try to do.
Now, Sean, this segues perfectly into what I want to talk about next, because you are a personal trainer and you work at 3 different Boston title boxing locations. So talk a little bit about what your daily life is like. Obviously, you're extremely busy, you know, doing your training job. And I wanted to discuss what it is that your diet is like, because I've seen some of your posts and you're really big on nutrition. So just discuss that a little bit if you can.
Yeah, so I worked at 3 different title boxing gyms all in Boston. You know, my day consists of training others, training myself, and eating, basically, my Mondays through Friday. So I'm always kind of on the move, and I really have to, when I'm in camp, I have to really have a strict schedule. You know, the last couple weeks I've spent eating Chinese food and pizza and enjoying it. You know, I don't get any regrets about that. It's all planned. So now I just have to schedule things and say, all right, these are the nights that I'm doing MMA training at Sit Your Tongue, and I have to be there each time. And then I'll do usually 2 strength and conditioning sessions a week where I lift a little heavier and focus on my strength. With that, I'll also do 2 more high-intensity, shorter-style interval training, you know, more kind of like getting you feel like you're in a fight, like 25 to 30 minutes. Get a couple of those in. And nutrition is just, it's all about planning. You have to be prepped, you know. So I stick to proteins. I stick to, you know, eating a clean diet, of course. I drink a lot of water. You know, nothing crazy. I eat a lot. I'm not a big 185. I've actually been walking around at 191 before this fight and after. So that's one nice thing, too. I haven't had to cut any weight for my last 2 fights. Literally just a little bit of a cleanse the last 3 or 4 days up to the fight, and I'm on weight eating the morning of. So that, I think, has benefited me quite a bit as well.
And how tall are you?
6 foot.
Okay. Yeah, so if you wanted to, as you got older, if you decided that it'd be more beneficial for you to fight at welterweight, you could cut down to 170 pretty easily.
Yeah, I've fought. My last 3 fights have been at 185, but my four fights before that have all been at 170.
Yeah, okay. So
most of my fights have been at 170, and I will go back there, but I figured make a run at 185, you know, fight some guys that are good matchups for me, get this belt, and then when it's time to move up to a higher level, I would definitely be at 170. And I've also seen that super welterweight weight class, 175, and that would be, like, beautiful for me.
Yeah.
That would be prime time.
I know a lot of people are really clamoring at the fact that these new weight classes that have been implemented, and hoping that a lot of these promotions around the country are going to start to put them in as you know, a weight class that people are going to want to get into and want to grow. So hopefully that's something that happens for you if that's what you're looking for. Also, I've got to get a couple other questions for you, Sean, on the whole diet thing, because I'm curious. I want to pick your brain here. For someone that wants to lose weight, you know, you yourself, you don't have to cut a whole lot, so you can kind of maintain. But for someone that is, you know, 20, 25 pounds heavier than normal, how important is diet versus cardio? And what should they be sticking to on a weekly basis as key foods in order for them to continue to lose weight?
Okay, so what I would recommend is they should be drinking a gallon of water a day. All right, cucumber water, especially with lemon, that can help increase your metabolism and improve your digestive system, so it's moving everything along. So that's something I would do throughout the day. You don't want to really drink anything else. Coffee, if you're going to drink coffee, drink it black. But I still drink coffee, you know what I mean? I'm not drinking coffee, so that too. And then after those fluids, you want to eat most of your carbs in the morning, because you're going to end up utilizing those throughout the day and burning them as you're moving around, either in the morning or before or after your training session. So if I know I'm going to do strength training, maybe I'll save more carbohydrates for before or after, used as fuel or recovery. Now, sugars also in the morning. You really want to limit sugars. That's a problem area. Sugars, obviously processed foods like corn syrup, get all that crap out of your diet, and a lot of greens. You can eat a lot of greens. So, I mean, if I'm going to eat breakfast, got my, you know, my eggs, maybe a meat, maybe some granola with, like, some almond milk, that's what I might do. I'm going to have a snack before lunchtime, you know, either a fruit or some almonds, something like that. And that's going to also let your body know that you are going to be receiving food on a regular basis, and it won't be afraid to burn this fuel off. It's all about fuel and when you're taking your fuel in and when you need it and when you don't. So you don't need it at 10 p.m. at night. So if I'm cutting weight, I'm I'm limiting my meals. Like, I eat at 5 p.m., and then maybe I'll do some sort of carbohydrate after I work out in a protein shake. But I'm not going to do anything else till the next day. Now, as you get closer to the fight, you even want to take out things like 2 weeks before, things like sugar, even from fruits. And my meals get smaller, but it has to be very planned because you don't want to tax your body too much and, you know, and feel lethargic and weak in those training sessions. Because I think that's why so many guys end up getting hurt close to a fight, is because they're dehydrated, their body's not functioning properly, and then they're in training, they're trying to keep up a fast pace because their mind is telling them, okay, it's almost time to fight, but their body's not getting what it needs. And guys get injured. You see it all the time, like 3 weeks, 2 weeks before a fight, which is unfortunate because that's when it's really getting hyped up and everything. So, and a lot of conditioning, you need to be sweating every day. You know what I mean? Every single day you need to be sweating. And as you get closer, you need to be shadow boxing and hitting the bag in layers. And you need to be, you know, sleeping with an extra layer sometimes if you want to really, really lose some weight.
So as you get older, as you approach 30 and beyond that, are you expecting to make changes to your diet in order to adjust and kind of stay ahead of the curve as you get older in your career?
Yeah, I mean, you got to train smart, and that's all around with your body and what's going into your body, and it's got to be a way of life and always researching and finding out what you need to do to change and listen to your body and seeing what you might need to add in or add out. But it's kind of a never-ending self-experiment. You know, I do these different styles of training methods, or sometimes I try to put on certain strength, or maybe I add something into my diet and see how it affects me, a certain supplement, a certain root, you know, from freaking South America or whatever it is that is in or out. I'm always trying to find what works best. So it's definitely going to be constant and always evolving.
Yeah, that's a lot of great insight, and I know that's something that a lot of people struggle with on a daily basis is maintaining their weight. Not everybody, you know, has the ability to stay in tip-top shape as someone such as yourself who works out full-time essentially for a job. You know, and I know a lot of my friends of mine who work, you know, 60 hours a week, and they complain because they don't have a chance to really get to the gym and sweat. So diet is really so important in order to really maintain a healthy lifestyle. Now, I want to transition back to your in-cage performances here, Sean. You have 5 wins by KO and 1 by submission. How confident are you as you continue to move forward within your career with your power and your stand-up game?
Oh, my power will just continue to increase. And the other thing is, with the increase of power, my skills are going to rise. So it's going to be more often that my knuckles are hitting people's chins and they're going down. And that's really what I want. Like, I wasn't satisfied with my last fight, even immediately after. Like, I want to knock someone out unconscious and have the ref, like, pull me back. Like, that's the kind of wins I want. I want to put someone out asleep. So I'm going to be starting private sessions with crew Mark Delagrotti for this next fight. And that's going to bring my overall martial arts education and knowledge way up.
Yeah, I know Marcus Davis very well, and he has said nothing but unbelievably good things about Delagrotti and how great of a coach and teacher and guy that he is. So that'll definitely move you to the next level. Now, Sean, what are your ultimate goals here? You talked a little bit earlier about staying with Cage Titans until you go to that next level, whether it's a Bellator or UFC. What are your end goals here? How far do you see yourself taking this thing?
I believe that I'll be in the UFC and that I have the work ethic and I will get there. And from there, I just got to see where it goes. You know, I'm also realistic, and I know guys get hurt and things don't go properly and things happen. But I believe that I'll make it to that next level. And, you know, I'm sitting at 7-2 after this fight. I'll have a belt sitting at 8-2. And I think within a couple years that I'll be ready to make that jump. And I'm just grinding right now and learning and enjoying the experience. It's what I love to do. You know, I'll be successful one way or the other, but my ultimate goal is to fight in the UFC. I said I wanted to fight in the UFC when I was like 15 years old for the first time, you know. So this is something that I've been thinking about for 11 years, and even at times when I haven't been training fully, it's the one thing that I feel like I need to chase and I need to put everything into and really grind for.
I know a lot of people have differing opinions on the Contender Series or just going to the UFC outright. Would you jump in an opportunity if Dana White or Sean Shelby called you to go to fight in Vegas, or would you rather just go to the UFC directly after impressing them with a fight?
I would do either. I feel like when the opportunity comes, you take it and you make the best of it.
So just any opportunity that you get to go up to this level that's been a dream of yours since 15, you're just going to jump at?
I most likely would. I mean, it would have to make sense, and I'd have to bring people on board because I'm a fighter and I want to fight. And whoever they said, let's fight, I would fight. And that's not always the best decision from a managerial standpoint. But I would be willing to go. Either way, I'd be happy with. And I feel like once you get to that point, it's your job to carve the path. At the end of the day, even if a guy's a little more skilled than you, you're a freaking fighter, and this is your opportunity to fight to make your life better and for opportunity. So you go in there and you take care of business when it comes down to it.
Well, you said a couple of years before you believe you're going to be at that level, but how many fights do you think you realistically need? How many more wins underneath your belt in addition to the title you're going to win in November?
I mean, I think you could jump up there at 9-2, 10-2, especially if seven of my eight fights are by finish. That's what they want to see. You know what I mean? They don't want to see three round freaking patty cake matches. They want to see finishes. And if I'm 9-2 with eight finishes, I don't think there's any reason that I can't be called.
Now, Sean, I got a question for you. I don't see any nickname listed for you. Do you have one that you use when you go and fight?
Well, Loco Lobo gave me the nickname the Unpredictable One. And recently, guys have been like, well, you're not unpredictable. We just know you're going to punch. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to go in there and fight. So it's the unpredictable one.
I was just about to say, with your move up to the UFC eventually, too, we need to get some marketable nickname, like the Notorious Conor McGregor. I like the unpredictable
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I think we can work around that.
The unpredictable one.
Speaking of the Notorious Conor McGregor, before we get you out of here, Sean, I want to get your thoughts on that spectacle of a fight last weekend between McGregor and Mayweather. How good did you think McGregor did, and how many rounds did you think he actually won?
So the rounds are debatable. You know, first I'll just say about the fight, like, you know, it was a show, it was a spectacle, you know, whatever you want to call it. And the whole time I was just like, I hope it's a good fight. I'm going to freaking pay the money because I get to see Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather in a ring together, you know. I'll pay for that. And I was saying all along, though, that McGregor, as much of a show as he puts on and everything in the media and leading up to the fight, hyping it up, like, he was coming to fight. He was training hard, and he wanted to win, you know? And I think he put on a great performance. I was impressed, you know? And a couple people, there's always people that hate on it, but I think he did great, and he landed more strikes than a lot of boxers have landed on Mayweather. And he looked good in the boxing ring. You know, he's fighting a guy that's 49-0. I think that whole thing was a win for him. I'm looking forward to him getting back to the UFC. And that's where I really want to see him fight. You know, we took a little break and watched this. But I was impressed with his performance. And I was glad it went as long as it did. And it was actually a good fight. Because it's just good for both sports. You know, if they go in there and all this money's on the line and all this hype's on the line and it's, you know, a quick finish or super controversial, it's not good for boxing. It's not good for MMA, you know, because so many uneducated and just kind of, you know, passing fans watch this fight, people that don't really know about it. So, you know, maybe they learned a little bit about both sports. Everyone was talking about it. It was crazy. The night before the fight, I was walking around Boston. I heard like 10 different conversations mentioning McGregor or Mayweather. You know, it was all over. So it was interesting.
I agree 1,000% with everything you just said. You hit it right on the money in my book. And it was an absolute pleasure talking with you today, Sean. You clearly have a bright future, and you're a very knowledgeable guy. We'd love to have you back on at some point here soon.
Yeah, man, I'll definitely join you guys again.
The Main Event is proud to be sponsored by the Sea Dog Brewing Company. The Sea Dog right here in Bangor is on 26 Front Street, right on the beautiful Penobscot River. You can reach them at the Sea Dog by dialing 207-947-8009, or if you want to check them out online, go to seadogbrewing.com. What you guys need to do is on Wednesdays, go spend your Wednesday night or evening, whatever it may be, at the Sea Dog. They have unbelievable specials. A 2-pound lobster with French fries and coleslaw, only $37. They also have a 14-ounce teriyaki ribeye with mashed potatoes medley, and that's $27. Or if you're not feeling like your paycheck isn't as much as it has been lately, you want to save a little money, they got you covered there too. Barbecue pulled pork sub, onions, peppers, and pepper jack cheese with shredded potato fries or sweet potato fries. That's only $12. So many different options for you to get at the Sea Dog. And as always, they have the delicious Blue Paw on tap and plenty more beers to choose from. Do yourself a favor. Go to the Sea Dog in Bangor at the Penobscot River, 26 Front Street, or you can call them 947-8009. On the phone now is one of the newest members to the UFC heavyweight roster. After improving his record to 9-2 with a third-round TKO of Dontell Mays at Dana White's Contender Series, Alan Crowder punched his ticket to the UFC. Alan, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, I appreciate you having me.
You got it. Now, how long of a camp did you have to prepare once you were officially approached with this huge Contender Series opportunity?
You know, after they called me and I got the offer, you know, they flew me out of Vegas and we had to do, like, the medical stuff and all that. I had almost 8 weeks, exactly.
And what was the game plan that your team put into place while you were preparing to take on Mays?
You know, the biggest part is, you know, I knew he was going to be bigger than I was. You know, he had a good reach advantage. My biggest game plan was, you know, to beat him up against the cage, wear him out on the cage, take him to the ground, stay heavy on top of him, you know, until I tire him out and then start picking him apart.
Now, the first round was back and forth, but you almost finished him with a Kimura at the end of the second round. If you had more time there in the second round, do you believe that you would have been able to get Mays to tap?
Oh, I definitely would have. When I first set it up, you know, I looked and I was like, yeah, I was like, he's going to tap any second now. I didn't hear the 10-second bell, so my next thought was like, I'm just going to rip the shoulder off, and then the bell rung immediately after I thought that, and then so I was just stepped on over his head and snapped it, but... Yeah.
Well, you clearly looked really good throughout this fight, and you could tell that Mays was gassed. How tired were you come round three?
Yeah, I'm not even gonna lie. I was pretty tired myself. You know, I trained really hard for this. You know, I didn't go. The elevation was definitely different in Vegas, and then I don't know if it was you know, extra added pressure of knowing Dana White was watching and the contract was on the line. So, you know, I definitely could feel it. Come third round, you know, the fight was over. I was definitely, you know, feeling very winded.
And
I
how,
could have finished out the third round if I needed to, but I was feeling it.
Yeah, and again, you look great. And how good did it feel, how good did you feel about Dana picking you after you got your hand raised? There were clearly a lot of great fights that night, and sometimes you never really know who he's going to pick. So I'm just curious, you know, how you felt about your chances of getting picked.
Man, it was like a dream come true, you know. It went to me the third round. You know, I figured, you know, this third round, I was like, you know, most time they like heavyweights to knock him out in the first round. You know, so I kind of didn't think I was going to get it. And then when they told me, I was just like, it's like, you know, it's a feeling you can't even explain. It's just great, you know.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. And when you heard that you were picked, explain that kind of feeling that came over you. And how did it measure up to the other best moments in your life that you can think of?
You know, one of the best moments of my life is whenever I married my wife. But I'd say that come, you know, pretty close to that, you know, just the feeling of, you know, what a great day this is, you know?
Absolutely. And now that you have officially made the big show here and you're in the UFC, what are your goals? What are we going to see from you down the line?
Yeah, you know, my goal is, you know, keep on winning. You know, I definitely want to let, you know, everyone know that, you know, I can be a top, you know, heavyweight contender. you know, in the top ranks, you know, so I'm just going to keep working my way up. And, you know, hopefully I fought Curtis Blades a couple years ago. He's in the UFC right now. I think he's ranked like 13. I definitely would love to get a rematch with him. And let's just see how things go.
Yeah, that was actually going to be another question of mine, is get a rematch with Curtis Blades. How would a second fight with him play out?
It'd definitely be a lot different the first time. The first time, you know, he picked me up, you know, he slammed me into a mat when my rib head actually popped out. I wasn't in very good shape. I didn't do no sparring before that fight. I took him lightly. You know, he was 4-0 at the time, and I watched him wrestle a lot of people, and I thought I'd be fine. But, you know, compared to now, it would be a completely different fight. You know, my wrestling skills have gotten way better, and my striking have gotten better. It would definitely be a show worth watching, that's for sure.
So, regardless if it's Blades or somebody else here, when is it that you'd like to make your UFC debut? Is there a time frame that you're thinking of that we're going to actually see you step into the octagon for the first time?
I mean, Christmas is right around the corner, so I'd definitely like to fight before Christmas. You know, get that nice little paycheck for you know, my family and stuff. But as soon as Dana White needs me, you know, I'll definitely be in the ring and, you know, do what I got to do.
And when you think about the future of your career and how much longer you want to fight, how many years do you plan on making your run in this sport? And have you thought about what you want to do when you're done fighting?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't want to be 40 years old still fighting. You know, my plan is, you know, my original goal was to, you know, see this thing out. If I hadn't made it to the UFC by 30, I was going to stop. But since I made it, you know, I'm going to continue to fight. I'm going to go as, you know, I'm going to fight till I'm 30, and then if I'm getting paid and I'm winning and everything's going, you know, the way I want it to and I still feel healthy, I'm going to continue on as long. I don't want to be one of those guys that, you know, like take Anderson Silva, for example. You know, he's a great fighter and was doing great, but as he got older, you know what I mean? Now I want to be remembered going down great, not, you know, hey, he got old.
Absolutely. And so have you thought about, you know, when that time does come to hang it up, what is it that you'd like to do when you're done fighting? You have any career, any other careers that you want to, you know, dive into?
Well, I was actually, before this fight right here, I'd gotten off the fire department and I had to resign from there because they hired me on. They were going to train me as I was going through the process. Well, when I got the fight, that it messed up the days I was in training. So I had to go and I had to resign from that. That way I could get back on a future day. I definitely would like to pursue that career. And I'd also like to open up my own gym and, you know, train other MMA fighters and stuff. That around the local area, there's not a whole bunch, you know, of MMA schools around here. And, you know, I feel like it could definitely, you know, help out some of the other younger kids that want to pursue their dreams.
Definitely. And I commend you for wanting to pursue the firefighting. That's something that I have the utmost respect for. My house actually burnt down when I was 10, and we lost a lot of our belongings. But the firemen that came and helped us out saved the majority of the house. And so it's a very traumatic thing for anyone to go through. So I commend you on wanting to do that.
Yeah, definitely. I think I appreciate it. Yeah, those guys, they, you know, they risked their lives out there. And, you know, I definitely would like to, you know, serve the community and, you know, be a part and help out.
Yeah, definitely a heroic job, to say the least. Alan, before we let you go, I'm sure you got plenty of you know, family and friends and sponsors that have helped you get to where you're at right now. So I'll just leave it to you. Who would you like to thank?
Oh, yeah, I'd definitely like to thank Mighty Meal. They sponsor all my food. New Millennium Fitness, Ruben Karaoke's BJJ, Cage Side, Mattia Chiropractic, Stewart's Physical Therapy, Carolina Sports Nutrition, Burleson Krav Maga. Definitely my coaches. My coaches helped out, you know, a ton in this right here. They've been there for me the last couple years and really improved my game and stuff. Jesse Ray, Eric Jeffries, and Spencer Knupp. You know, they've been big part of helping me out and growing, and they're going to see me out and help make sure I get, you know, maybe one day get that heavyweight belt.
Well, we definitely look forward to it, and we appreciate your time talking to us here today. Hopefully we'll have you back on down the line.
Most definitely. I appreciate it. Thank you all.
And there you have it, episode 75 of The Main Event. Well, it seems like just yesterday, we say it all the time, but it seems like just yesterday that we started this one in the summer of 2016 or just prior to it, and now we're getting closer and closer to another milestone in episode number 100, and I have to ask Ryan, what are we going to do for 100? Because we actually have to plan it. Because 50 came and went, which seemed like 2 weeks ago that we actually had
crazy.
That. But we didn't do anything really, really huge.
Yeah.
So.
I think we need to do some sort of kind of like in studio special where we have, you know, a bunch of the local fighters in, and we have some healthy vegetables and some dip and maybe some cheese and crackers, and we just kind of like do like a round table talk, something like that.
And Dana White presents us with our own UFC belt, each one of us?
Or how about just, you know, a UFC contract to be like his...
to fight?
No,
you versus
not
Ryan Sanders. We finally get to see it.
No, not going there. But, you know, we can be his specific broadcasting team, you know, and we'll eventually take over for Rogan and...
And Anik. I like John, but like... there's you know, no friends in broadcasting if there means you know, a six-figure payday or whatever.
How nice would that be?
It would be nice, but you know what? I am serious about this, and we just haven't done it yet. But I'm pretty sure we'll have Dana White on again. We had him early on in the show's history, but I think we're actually going to legit have him on before or maybe on the 100th show. I think that's a realistic thing too. And of course, maybe we can just do a clip show like everyone else does for their 100th episode too, right? We just play clips of all the creators.
We could do that.
Like Friends or something?
Yeah, but I almost feel like that's not doing our 100th episode enough service.
It's true.
You know what I mean? We need to produce some new content because that's what everyone tunes in to hear is new content. So thank you to all of our listeners out there that have helped us grow and get to the point we're at right now. We're both incredibly grateful to be able to continue to do this, which we both very much love and enjoy thoroughly. So it's a lot of fun.
And we put in a lot of hard work, too, to get you a whole bunch of great interviews coming up. And also, again, mark your calendars because we'll be down in, the Topsom Sea Dog.
That's right.
And we will be doing a live show, and we're going to be recording it, so you'll be able to hear it. It might be one, it might be two, more than likely going to be two, or even three episodes of the show. So we might even put out like a special like early week edition if we have so much content. So we'll have a whole bunch of stuff from First Class MMA. And then who knows, maybe we'll also do some other location ones where we, I don't know, talk with some other gyms maybe that are a little closer by than Topsom. Just a little hint for you too. But we also have some great interviews too lined up for the rest of the month because we put in some hard work to make sure we got them all done, and I think you're going to enjoy that along with our previews and breakdowns of the UFC pay-per-views coming up in September and also in October as well.
Yeah, a lot of good content coming your way. Make sure that you're paying attention to us on Facebook at the main event. Follow us on iTunes and Google Play.
Yep.
What else we have out there?
Oh, all things out there and even more ways. Very, very soon, like as in next week even, there might be new ways to follow the show and what we're doing too. That's my last hint here. Maybe I'll tease it a little bit on Saturday. But yeah, the announcement of bigger things to come here is also coming within the next 7 days if you're listening to this when this initially drops on Wednesday. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun things and we'll have a lot more to talk about, including on the next episode. Who do we have coming up for us, Ryan?
Oh, geez, on the next episode, we're going to have Julian Marquez, who just had that unbelievable head kick knockout.
Vicious
knockout, and was able to sign to the UFC. And we'll do our UFC 215 predictions, which is always something you do not want to miss because we come with the heat like Heather does every time out when we're giving our predictions.
And the belt will be on the line. It'll be up for grabs to whomever gets the most picks correct. It's no sort of title defense logic. It's vacated. Right now the champion is vacant, and it won't be after UFC 215, so I'm looking forward to that one.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm going to bring it back home, just going to say. It's going to be nice. I'll hang it up, you know, I'll polish it real nice.
We'll see.
You know, some time. I'll treat it nice for you, Ryan.
All right. Well, the triple champ might be back.
Triple champ.
This will be the triple champ.
Well, that's going to do it for us. We're getting a little stir crazy, but we will be back this weekend with a brand new edition of the main event. For Ryan Drell, Brian Stackpole saying
peace.